Welcome to History Class After Hours. I'm Joseph Barra. And joining me once again is Tyler.
Hello.
And we are going to finish up our saga on the Lincolns.
Yeah.
So the first episode, we talked about kind of the early life of Mary Todd Lincoln, how it was definitely, you could say, challenging. And then last week, we talked about the assassination of her husband, Abraham. And so today we're going to kind of look at what happens to her post-assassination, post-life in the White House.
Yeah.
Things don't get much better. So basically, Mary Todd was with Abraham. We talked about this when he was assassinated. She accompanied him across the street to the Peterson house, where he was taken to a back bedroom and laid crosswise on the bed. There, Lincoln's cabinet was summoned, everyone except William Seward. We talked about him last week because he was violently attacked by Lewis Powell as part of the assassination attempts. Their oldest son, Robert, sat with Abe through the night and to the following morning, Saturday, April 15th, 1865. At one point, Secretary of War Edwin Stanton ordered Mary from the room as she was so unhinged with grief. So that will give you a good idea of what she is going through.
Yeah, she's really not in a good
Really in a good state of mind
anyway,
because of the death of her sons. And this is just going to kind of put her over the edge.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can't imagine what, you know, that's just really tough.
Yes.
A few years there.
I think she, lost two sons and then her husband?
Yeah.
Abe Lincoln would remain in a coma for approximately 9 hours, but he dies at 7:22 a.m., Mary was allowed to return to Lincoln's side, and as Dixon reported, she again seated herself by the president, kissing him and calling him every endearing name. As he died, his breathing grew quieter, his face more calm. According to some accounts, as his last drawn breath on the morning after the assassination, he smiled broadly and then expired. So, after her husband's death, she received many messages of condolences from around the world, many of which she attempted to answer personally. So, I guess she plans on traveling and seeing some of these people face to face, or just straight up write to them individually.
Yeah.
To Queen Victoria, she wrote, "I've received a letter which Your Majesty has had the kindness to write. I'm deeply grateful for its expressions of tender sympathy, coming as they do from a heart which from its own sorrow can appreciate the intense grief I now endure." Victoria had lost her husband, Albert, a couple of years before that.
Okay, so these are big people. I was thinking more like just like the U.S. public.
Yes.
No, these are like major people from around the world.
Correct, monarchies and all that stuff. Yeah. As a widow, Mary Todd will return to Illinois, and she lives in Chicago with her sons. Her husband had left an estate of $80,000, which should have been enough to keep her in comfort, if not in style. But in 1868, Miss Lincoln, who had a lavish, unstable relationship with money, advertised in the New York World for aid and attempted to sell her personal effects at auction, which shocked the public. If you don't remember from the kind of the first episode of all this stuff, she got Abe into some trouble because in the midst of the Civil War, she decided that it was time to remodel the White House.
Yeah. And
spent like millions of dollars on that.
Yeah.
So she's a spender.
Yeah.
So she and her young son, Tad, moved to Europe and settled in Frankfurt, Germany for several years. During this time, the Siegelman family helped look after her, paying the cost of the voyage, sending her money, and advocating on her behalf. In 1868, a former dressmaker and confidant, Elizabeth Keckley, published Behind the Scenes, or 30 Years a Slave and 4 Years in the White House. She had been born into slavery, purchased her freedom and that of her son, and became a successful businesswoman in D.C. Although this book provides valuable insight into the character and life of Mary Todd Lincoln, at the time, the former First Lady regarded it as a breach of friendship and confidentiality. Keekly was widely criticized for her book, especially as her editor had published letters from Mary Lincoln to her. It's now been gratefully accepted by many historians and biographers, and has been used to flesh out the president and first lady's personalities behind the scenes in the White House, and that has become the basis of several movies. So a lot of what we know post assassination of Mary Todd Lincoln comes from these letters and things like that. But most people thought like Mary Todd Lincoln's like an untouchable. Like,
yeah.
No, she doesn't deserve any criticism.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah.
In an act approved by a low margin on July 14th, 1870, Congress granted Mary Todd Lincoln a life pension of $3,000 a year, which is just about $70,000 a year today.
That's not too much. Not considering modern spending.
Mm. So let's see. If she was given $80,000 as part of her husband's will, 83. Now we're trying to do math again.
Yeah, that's like somewhere in the.
She has over $1 million in today's money. Yeah. She was left over $1 million and she spent it already.
Yeah.
She lobbied hard for such a pension, writing numerous letters to Congress and urging patrons such as Simon Cameron and Joseph Siegelman to petition on her behalf. She insisted that she deserved a pension just as much as the widows of soldiers, as she portrayed her husband as a fallen commander. At the time, it was unusual for widows of presidents, and Mary Lincoln had alienated many congressmen, making it difficult for her to gain approval.
Yeah, so she's just trying to, like,
yeah,
Congress for money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then her son Tad dies in July 1871. This followed the death of two of her other sons and her husband. So this is the third son that she's lost, and this will put her into a larger state of grief and depression. Her surviving son, Robert Lincoln, rising young Chicago lawyer, was alarmed at his mother's increasingly erratic behavior. In March 1875, during a visit to Jacksonville, Florida, Mary became unshakably convinced that Robert was deathly ill. Hurrying to Chicago, she found him healthy. During her visit with him, she told him that someone had tried to poison her on the train and that someone had taken her pocketbook but returned it later. She also spent large amounts of money there on items she never used, such as draperies and elaborate dresses, because she only wore black after her husband's assassination.
Yeah, so she's basically going crazy at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's still wearing black signifies that she's still mourning the loss of her husband. She would walk around the city with $56,000 in government bonds sewn into her petticoats or undergarments. Despite this large amount of money and the $3,000 a year stipend from Congress, Miss Lincoln had an irrational fear of poverty. She always thought she needed more money. She's kind of like the McClellan.
Yeah.
George McClellan always thought he needed more soldiers. Well, she always thinks she needs more money. In 1872, she went to a spiritualist photographer, William H. Mumler, who produced a photograph of her that appears to faintly show Lincoln's ghost behind her. If you really want to go see the original copy of this, you can go to the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's kind of a random spot.
What?
Shout out to all our listeners in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I believe that's where.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where good old Jeep Willys are made.
Fort Wayne's an okay town.
There's a fort there, I think.
Maybe.
I think there's still a fort there, yeah. Like an old, like, War of 1812 fort.
Mm-hmm.
The College of Psychic Studies, referencing notes belonging to William Stainton Moses, claims that the photo was taken in the early 1870s, that Lincoln had assumed the name of Miss Lindell, and that Lincoln had to be encouraged by Mumler's wife to identify her husband on the photo. P.T. Barnum, testifying against Mumler in his eventual fraud trial, presented a photo featuring himself with the ghost of Abraham Lincoln, demonstrating for the court how easy it was to make one of Mumler's images. The image is recognized now as a hoax created via double exposure. And basically, he was just trying to get money off Mary Todd.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of known that she was into, like, seances and trying to contact, like, dead people.
Yeah.
Because she had done that in the White House. Yeah. She was trying to talk to her two sons.
Yeah. So that just seems kind of mean to, like, try to take advantage of this later. They just lost four of her loved ones.
And also she's mentally unstable.
Yeah.
He's definitely taking advantage.
It's just not cool by that guy.
Due to her erratic behavior, Robert initiated proceedings to have her institutionalized. On May 20th, 1875, following a trial, a jury committed her to a private asylum in Batavia, Illinois. And in the 1870s, that is not a place you wanted to be. Mental asylums in the late 1800s, early 1900s were just not. I think we did an episode of a reporter that broke into one. Just kind of show what life was like, and like people tied the beds, electrotherapy. They believed they could scare the crazy out of you. It was called the snake pit theory. So they would literally just throw you in like a pit and throw snakes all over you, thinking they could scare it. Your mental illness out of you.
Nothing really comes around with that, but like the progressive era, trying to get that better. So I can only imagine how bad it is. If it's like a main cause of progressive era politics.
After the court proceedings, she was so dependent or despondent that she attempted suicide. She went to several pharmacies and ordered enough laudanum to kill herself, but an alert pharmacist frustrated her attempts and finally gave her a placebo. Said, here, you can have it, but it's not actually the real stuff. 3 months after being committed to Bellevue Place, she devised her escape plan. She smuggled letters to her lawyer, James B. Bradwell, and his wife, Myra Bradwell, who is not only a friend, but also a feminist lawyer, which is pretty unheard of at that time. Just a female lawyer in general.
That might be the most surprising thing in this whole episode.
1870s, you did not see a lot of females in the law practice or law business. She also wrote to the editor of Chicago Sun-Times. Soon, the public embarrassments that Robert had hoped to avoid were looming, and his character and motives were in question as he controlled his mother's finances. So, put mom away, I get her money. And that's what they're thinking is happening here. The director of Bellevue at Mary's trial had assured a jury she would benefit from treatment in his facility. In the face of potentially damaging publicity, he declared her well enough to go to Springfield to live with her sister Elizabeth as she desired. Mary Lincoln was released into the custody of her sister in Springfield in 1876. She was declared competent to manage her own affairs. She had a pretty good relationship with that sister. If you don't remember from episode one, that's the sister that she moved in with originally when her basically her dad and stepmom disowned her. And that's where she met Abe. Springfield, Illinois. The earlier committal proceedings had resulted in Mary being profoundly estranged from her son, Robert, and they did not see each other again until shortly before her death. So now she's pretty much just lost her last son.
Basically.
So I'm wondering if there is some truth to him just trying to take her money. Like, mom is getting too difficult to take care of. I'm going to say she's crazy and take her money.
Yeah, I'd say there's probably both sides there. I think she's probably pretty crazy, but, you know, he might have also been trying to take her money.
I guess Robert does not get the honest Abe gene. So Abe Lincoln never could tell a lie. Miss Lincoln spent the next 4 years traveling throughout Europe and took up residence in Pau, France. No idea where that is, but anyway. So this is her second stint in Europe. Her final years were marked by declining health. She suffered from severe cataracts that reduced her eyesight. This condition may have contributed to her increasing susceptibility to falls. In 1879, she suffered spinal cord injuries after she fell off a stepladder.
So if you don't have sight, and then you go on a stepladder.
How high up was she? She have spinal cord injuries?
That must be
like, that's like...
That's like a regular ladder, not a
stepladder. I know, that's a big...
Stepladder.
She traveled to New York in 1881 and lobbied for more pension money after the assassination of President Garfield raised the issue of provisions for his family. If you want to learn more about the assassination of President Garfield, go back and listen to our episode on the assassination of President Garfield.
Isn't that the one where his wife poisoned him?
No, that was Harding, possibly. Go back and listen to our episode on William G. Harding if you want to see if his wife poisoned him. No, Garfield was the one where I forgot the guy's name. He shot him at the train station.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That one.
And then basically Garfield would have lived, but his doctor, like, really botched the surgery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I forgot the guy's name, though.
There's quite a few.
He was very mentally unstable as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's quite a few.
That was when the spoil system kind of.
Yeah. That was like, there was a few assassination attempts throughout that time period.
McKinley
had, yep, McKinley.
Roosevelt,
yeah.
Then someone threw a bomb at McKinley?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My presidential trivia isn't very great, but. Yep, so in 1881, lobbied for that pension. She faced a difficult battle due to a negative press over her spending habits and rumors about her handling of her personal finances, including $56,000 in government bonds left to her by her husband.
So they're basically like, lady, you spend a whole bunch of money.
Yes. Why do we need to give you more? And I'm wondering if she's still carrying that $56,000 of bonds in her coat. They brought that up at the congressional hearings. They're like, you have $56,000 in bonds. Why don't you just cash those in? But they're in my coat.
They're in my coat.
They're sewed into my coat. I can't spend them. They eventually grant her the increase along with an additional monetary gift. During the early 1880s, Mary Lincoln was confined to the Springfield, Illinois residence of her sister Elizabeth Edwards. On July 15th, 1882, exactly 11 years after her youngest son died, she collapsed at her sister's home, lapsed into a coma, and died the next morning of a stroke at the age of 63. Her funeral service was held at the First Presbyterian Church in Springfield. That is where she is buried, in Springfield.
Yeah.
Along with her husband in the Lincoln Crypt.
That is they did a really good job with that grave.
Didn't they just read?
They redid it a few years ago.
Yeah, didn't they just
have to go back up there?
Like refurbish it or something?
Yeah, like I got to go back up there last year, and like, so I've been there twice.
Did you go to his house?
I did not go to his house. One before they did the refurbishing, one after, and they did a really good job with the refurbishing. It's really nice.
Did you go to his presidential library?
I did go to the presidential
library. How was that?
It's just like any other presidential library.
It's just documents?
Yeah.
I've never been to one. I've always wondered what they, it's just all their documents stuff.
Yeah, I went to one in Iowa. I forgot which president that was.
Hoover.
Hoover, yeah.
The Hoover. Go listen to our Hoover episode.
Yeah,
the only president from Iowa.
Yeah, that's a really good one. That one's better than the Lincoln one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening, guys. Join us next week as we go back to John Wilkes Booth and we investigate: did he really die in that barn?
Or did he not?
Thank you for tuning in to History Class After Hours, the show where we talk about the things your history teachers didn't have time to teach you. If you wanted to stay updated on upcoming events for the History Club, please visit www.starsmillhistoryc.wixsite.com/2020. If you liked this episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe to our channel on iTunes Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be on the lookout for new episodes, and we'll be posting every week. Until next time, stay curious.